Okay, well, this, of course, is a place where I say the same thing almost every week, and it goes something like this. Turn with me, if you will, to where this week's Torah portion begins. It's at the very beginning of chapter 12 of the book of Vayikra, or Leviticus, and it says, as a lot of them do, "And Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe, and he said..." All right, here's where we get the words in red, the quotations that normally would be in there. And what he said is, "Speak unto the children of Israel and say the following. If a woman..." Well, it says "be delivered" in this English rendering. If a woman basically has seed, is the real root word there, and that word is zerah, so tazriah. When she has seed and is delivered and bears, well, one of two things, either a man-child or a woman-child. This is obviously before political correctness came into play, and it could be none of the above, or all of the above, or anything else that men say rather than what the creator of the universe said. Okay, as you know, that's probably on my hit parade this week, because there's a whole lot of news on that front that just kind of speaks to where we are. But back in the days when we actually understood male and female, he created them, and a little bit about what was really written as opposed to what men say he should have written, it made this distinction. Now, all this Torah portion, of course, from here on out is politically incorrect because, well, none of this stuff, says the whore church, matters. It's all done away with. Trouble is, he says not one yod or tittle is going to change, and it still matters. So I'm going to go with the creator of the universe rather than those who call him a liar. So here we go. What are they being told? If the woman delivers a male child, well, then there are several things that are going to happen. One, there's a period of uncleanness or impurity, and the word in the Hebrew is nidah there, which is used to represent something similar to the menstrual time. So she's unclean originally for 7 days. And then it says on the 8th day, Shmini, we've talked about that word, the flesh of the baby's foreskin shall be circumcised. Now, this is always kind of interesting, of course. This is the commandment that there will be a sign that will be given to the male children of the sons of Israel. And you'll hear this term in the Hebrew. They call it the Brit Milah, the circumcision covenant. So Brit is the covenant of circumcision. And, of course, it is the covenant that was originally given with Abraham, and he never said that it was going to be changed. Now, there was a big argument in Acts, which we may talk about later. I'm not going to get sidetracked there tonight. But I will make a couple more comments on this 8th day thing, because it's interesting. This is another one of those places where if you see what science has discovered that the Creator knew all along, there are a couple of things interesting. I've even seen charts or graphs of immune response with baby infants. And it has to do with a lot of things. Mother's milk and the infant immune system, of course, is originally not fully developed. It develops. And back before vaccines messed it all up, we had a number of childhood diseases and other things that would typically happen. But in any case, there is a set of charts that shows that the immune response of the newborn baby peaks. Literally, it's a pretty pronounced peak on the 8th day. Isn't that amazing? The other thing that happens is on the 8th day, the pain response kind of has a major lull or a null spot. So it's almost like this was a great place to either design the baby so that this could happen, or, well, at least use the thing the way he designed it to put that as a sign. And in any case, yeah, it's politically incorrect, but we still ought to be doing it because he says so, and it hasn't changed. The woman, after the 8th day, continues, it says, in the blood of purification for another 33 days. She's to touch no hallowed thing, not able to come into the sanctuary until the period of time here has expired. So that's part A. Part B is, well, what if she bears a maiden child, as opposed to a young boy? Well, then everything is doubled, essentially. Her period of impurity, she shall be unclean for 2 weeks, continuing in the blood of purification for 66 days. So that would be 66 days. Again, twice the 33 for the male. A lot of discussion as to why that is. And the simplest explanation I've heard, again, doesn't mean it's right. It just means that it fits. Your mileage may vary. Is that when there is a woman child, of course, the woman child herself will later bear other children. So that's part of the at least hand-waving explanation for the doubled period of time. Again, we don't know for sure, but it is, in fact, what it is. When the days of her purification are fulfilled, whether it's a son or a daughter, she is to bring a lamb of the first year for a burnt offering, a young pigeon, or a turtle dove for a chatat, a sin offering, unto the door of the tent of meeting and the priest, the Kohen. And there he will offer it before Yahuwah and make atonement for her, and she will be cleansed from the fountain of her blood. This is the Torah for her that bears, whether it's a male or a female. Oh, and by the way, it says, if she is not a wealthy person, if her means do not suffice for a lamb, well, then she's able to use two turtle dove or two young pigeons, one for the burnt offering, the olah, the other for the sin offering, and the priest shall make atonement for her, and again, she shall be clean. Tahor, and it's the female version of that, so tahora. Now, chapter 13, we're going to get a whole different kind of a thing going on here. This is interesting. And by the way, this is a fairly short Torah portion. Sometimes it's doubled up, but doesn't seem to be this year. It says, "And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and unto Aaron, and he said the following. When a man shall have in the skin of his flesh a rising or a scab or a bright spot becomes in the skin of his flesh like the plague of," here's a word we've never seen before, first use in the scripture, Zara'at. "Then he shall be brought unto Aaron the priest, or one of his sons, the Kohenim." And basically what it's going to describe over the next few verses is the priest's going to look at it, and he will make an assessment of what it is. Now, I want to make a couple of observations kind of as we go through this. One, the entire, well, not only this chapter, but next week's Torah portion as well, that has to do with this idea of Zara'at. And I'm not even going to use the word. I'll mention it because you'll probably say, why isn't he using the word? Well, it's not the same as leprosy, Hansen's disease. What we're talking about here is not leprosy. It generally gets translated that way, but leprosy is a whole different ailment. As a matter of fact, whatever this is, this Zara'at, it doesn't seem to have been around for, centuries at this point. Leprosy, on the other hand, Hansen's disease, you know, I've seen, or at least from the air, the leper colony in Hawaii. This is not the same thing. It might have certain similarities, but just about anybody that's studied it will tell you, nope, no doubt about it, it is not the same. Very key, though, in understanding this Zara'at is that it has something to do with cleanliness and uncleanliness. Now, people will throw in the word ritual impurity. I'm not wild about that. But nevertheless, somehow or other, it has to do with clean and unclean things. Now, what I think is kind of fascinating about this, and now I'll go back and we'll touch on the end of last week's Torah portion. The thing that leads up to this portion, Tazria, this Parsha, is the last verse of chapter 11. It says, this is the Torah of all kinds of things, food and not food, beast, fowl, every living thing. And the point is, he wants us to be able to, quote, make a difference. The root word, Beit Dalet Lamed, from dividing the light from the darkness, first used there. He wants us to be able to divide, to separate, to discern between the clean and the unclean. Last week it was talking about things that are food, things that may be eaten, things that aren't to be eaten. And in turn, they, as it turns out, carry a curse. This time we're going to talk about several things that have to do, again, with the clean and the unclean. A woman who delivers a baby, which is a great blessing, nevertheless has a period of uncleanness that varies after that birth, depending upon whether it's a little baby or a little baby girl or a little baby boy. And then in chapter 13, we talk about this whole topic of Zara'at. Again, not to be confused with leprosy, but some kind of a skin ailment. A smiting. Now, it's interesting, too, and I will not go into a lot of detail yet on this. I do think there is some interesting midrash to understand about what's going on here. But if you've never heard it before, I guess it bears repeating. The almost universal understanding, and I can see where they can come up with this from Scripture. So it's not something I'm reluctant to suggest. I'm just going to say it doesn't say explicitly, "Thus spoke Yah," but it certainly does give us examples in Scripture, Moshe's hand, Miriam, and other things that indicate, yeah, there's something about this particular ailment. Well, curse, literally, that is associated with the clean and the unclean. And in particular, of course, you'll hear this term, the evil tongue, a.k.a. Lashon Hara. Hara, bad or evil. So Lashon, tongue or speech that is bad or evil. There are other things that the rabbis have said over the years. Oh, here are some traditional punishments for which Zara'at is often associated. Now, whether or not this is true, again, I'll just mention it as we get ready to go through all this. Not just evil tongue, Lashon Hara, which is at the top of the heap, but murder, vain oaths. And if you think about it, a vain oath is a little bit like an evil tongue thing. It comes out of the mouth. Illicit sexuality, let me just put it in the broadest terms, adultery, primarily similar kinds of things. I would imagine bestiality or other stuff might bring it on. Pride, theft, and miserly behavior are the remainder of the seven sins that are supposedly associated with it. Okay, I mention that just because what is really fascinating to me about Zara'at is the idea that we don't see it anymore. And it always kind of tends to bring up the question, why? And I do accept, can't prove it again, so this would be Markology as well, that it was a blessing in disguise. In other words, this was a malady, a curse that was visited by the Creator on His people in order to keep them in line. Which kind of helps to make kind of go full circle with the list of things that might bring it on. They all have to do with being unclean. They all have to do with things where there is a feedback loop that was at least evidently established that says, you do that, this bad stuff's going to happen. Need to get yourself cleaned up. Need to understand, discern the difference between the clean and the unclean. Things that bring death and things that bring life. All right, so with all of that kind of on the table, and I've got pages and pages of stuff that I've accumulated over the years about the why, and is it possible to still be to catch, if you will, Zara'at nowadays? By the way, one who has this ailment is referred to as a metzora. Got Zara'at, you're a metzora. In any case, we'll come back to that, I'm sure, as we talk about this, not only this week, but later as well, next week. I'm going to do it. I debated whether or not to do it. I have told a really old joke just about every year on this topic, but to my mind, even though you all know the punchline, if you've ever heard me speak this portion before or teach it, I'll still do it because I think, at least, even for those that don't understand the American pastime of baseball, it somehow or other fits. Because essentially the rest of this chapter is going to talk about some specifics of what the Kohen is to look for. But it's also, more importantly, going to make it clear in the language that's used that is that it is the Kohen that declares, and that's what's interesting about this, he declares whether something is Zara'at or not. So whether we're talking about a person or later on even clothing or a building, it is the priest that's going to look at it and say, yep, it is or it ain't. And what he says is what it is. So let me read the first verse, and then we'll come back to the rest of the old joke. The priest, it says, a Kohen, shall look upon this thing, this plague, in the skin of the person's flesh. And if the hair in that plague is turned white, and the appearance of the plague is deeper than the skin of his flesh, in other words, it's sunken, it's concave, it is the plague of Zara'at. And the priest shall look upon him, and literally, declare, pronounce, he will say it, he is unclean, tamei. And then there's other verses that say, okay, if it's a bright spot that's white and it's not deeper and the hair hasn't turned white, well, then he's going to shut him up for 7 days. So he can check him out in a week and see whether or not it's changed. Behold, after the seventh day, if it's stayed in appearance, hadn't spread, well, he's going to shut him up for 7 days more. Again, he looks at him at the end of that 7 days, sees if it's dimmed or spread. And if it hasn't, well, then he's pronounced to be tahor, clean. It's a scab. Wash his clothes. Everything's fine. But if it's spread after he's shown himself to the priest, he doesn't need to go show himself. He does show himself one more time. And now he looks, and if the scab has spread, in other words, it's growing, the priest will pronounce that he is, in fact, unclean. Tameh. It is zara'at. And then there's going to be some description about what's going to happen. All right, we'll come back to that in a second. But here is the joke that I promised, and most of you could probably tell it by now. I'm looking around the room. Yeah, everybody here has probably heard it. I don't know. Tino's heard it too, right? Okay, I think everybody's heard this joke. But it goes like this. There's these three umpires, baseball umpires. These are guys that call balls and strikes and declare, you know, whether somebody has crossed the plate safely before getting tagged, and or whether he's out, whether the catch was a fair catch, and all that kind of jazz. And the three umpires are in this bar, and they're arguing about which one of them is the greatest umpire. And the first guy says, "I calls them as I sees them." And the other ones look at him like, a big deal, okay? The second guy says, "That ain't nothing. I calls them as they are." Okay, he's superior because he doesn't just see them. He calls them the way they really are. Well, the third umpire seems to have an understanding here of the way the Kohen works with Zara'at. And he looks at them and he says, guys, that ain't nothing. Understand this. They aren't anything until I calls them. Right? Balls and strikes, out, safe. They're nothing until he calls them. And ultimately, I like the joke because that is exactly what Scripture is talking about with Zara'at. It ain't nothing until the Kohen says that's what it is. And one of the things you'll see in the current literature in the Midrash is, well, you know, we got no one around who's able to not only call them as he sees them or as they are, but to declare them into existence or not, to declare Tahor and Tameh anymore. Which is kind of fascinating in a way. To my mind, that's always been the thing about this subject of Zara'at and the Metzora that is striking. It's also the reason why, people say, well, it doesn't matter. It's not important. We haven't seen it for a long time. In the past, I've suggested it, in a way, can be considered a blessing to have this feedback mechanism that says, you know, when things are unclean, let's declare them what they are. And furthermore, we'll have this feedback mechanism that says to somebody who is, well, let's just say it this way, doing things that would not qualify them for a seat on the floor of Congress, if they were all covered with leprosy-looking kind of stuff, maybe people would say, unclean, unclean, unclean. We don't want them in there. They should have said that in a lot of cases, in a whole lot of people in the swamp. But what we have instead, because we don't have this feedback mechanism of Zara'at, we got people that are not only bearing false witness, Lashon Hara, they put their hand on the Bible, they take a fake oath, they declare all kinds of things that everybody knows they're lying through their teeth about. And wouldn't it be cool if they just went white as snow and, hair started doing nasty things on their bodies and, they would have to yell, unclean, 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 and be put outside the camp. Cool. But we don't have that. Sadly, and yeah, I think it would be a major improvement. All right, we'll go through some of the rest of this. I won't go into a lot of detail because, again, I would encourage folks to read this, read it for yourself, and understand the amount of detail that the Scripture puts in this chapter and the reason why. Okay, so I'll go over it fairly rapidly. Behold, priest, the Kohen shall look. If there's a white rising in the skin, the hair is turned white, and the quick raw flesh is in the rising. Well, this is an old Zara'at in the skin of his flesh. He is unclean, however. He is Tameh, and he doesn't shut him up. He is unclean. If the Zara'at breaks out abroad in the skin, covers all the skin of him that has the plague from his head unto his feet, as far as he can appear to the Kohen, well, the priest, the Kohen, looks. Behold, if it's covered all his flesh, now get this is interesting, he is to pronounce him clean. the one that has this plague. It's all turned white. He's done. He's cooked. He's now clean. He is the whore. But if he's still got raw flesh hanging on there, well, he is unclean. The priest looks upon the raw flesh, pronounces him unclean. There you go. It's Zaraat. But if the raw flesh again turns white, he comes to the priest, looks on him. Behold, it's all white. He is clean. Interesting, right? It's kind of like you wait until everything has been rotisseried and he's done. When the flesh is in the skin of the boil, it's healed. The place where the boil, there is a white rising or a bright spot, reddish white. Show that to the Kohen. He looks. If the appearance is lower than the skin, the hair's turned white, pronounce him unclean. It is, in fact, Zaraat. It's broken out in the boil. But if he looks and the priest says, I don't see any white hairs there. It's not lower than the skin. It's just dim. Well, we're going to do the same thing we talked about earlier. Shut him up for 7 days. See if it spreads. And ultimately, when it's all said and done, either the priest declares him to be tahor, or he declares him to be tameh. Okay, so continuing on down here, verse 26, priest looks, behold, there's no white hair in the bright spot. It's not lower than the skin, it's skin, but it's dimmed. Well, then we're going to shut him up for 7 days. On the seventh day, he looks again, sees if it's spread, and so forth. All right, down towards verse 29. When a man or a woman has this plague upon the head or upon the beard, the priest shall look on the plague and behold. Okay, if it's deeper than the skin, maybe it's yellow this time, thin hair, then he is unclean. Tameh. It's a scald. It is Zaraat of the head or of the beard. And then he looks at it some more, and again, we might have to shut him up for 7 days and check it out again. And if on the seventh day, this time, the Kohen looks upon the plague, and the skull hasn't spread, and there's no more yellow hair, and the appearance of the skull is not deeper than the skin, then going to shave the person. But the skull he shall not shave. Priest shuts him up 7 days more. And then at the end of that time, he looks at it and sees what's happened. Has it spread? Is the appearance not deeper than the skin? Well, in this case, right, he is clean. Wash his clothes and be clean. But if it's spread after the cleansing, look upon him. The priest shall not seek for the yellow hair. He already knows. He is unclean. But if it stays, the priest will what? He ain't nothing till I calls him. He is clean at this point. And we got the issue of a man or woman having a skin with bright spots in the flesh, bright white spots. If a man's hair falls off, he's bald, but he can be clean. Yet if his hair has fallen off from the front part of his head, he's forebald, but he's still clean. If he's a bald head or bald forehead, reddish white plague, and the Zaraat is breaking out on his bald head, the priest looks upon him. Behold, check it out. Is it reddish white in his bald head? And if it appears to be Zaraat in the skin of his flesh, the priest will declare he is a leprous man. He is unclean. Surely, it says, he will be pronounced unclean. He's got the plague in his head. Now, these cases, this person, this metzora, in whom this plague is, will rend his clothes. The hair of his head shall go loose. He will cover his upper lip, and he shall cry, Tameh! Tameh! Unclean, unclean. And all the days that he is suffering from this affliction, he is unclean. He's unclean. He will dwell alone outside the camp. And we have the situation where this plague can be in a garment, woolen or linen, in the warp or in the woof, or in the wool or the skin, anything made of skin like leather. If the plague is greenish or reddish in a garment, in the skin or the warp or the woof, it is in fact Zaraat, and it shall be shown to the priest. He looks at it, and he shuts up the thing that has the plague, right? We know how long? 7 days. And on the seventh day, he checks it out again, sees if it has spread. The warp or the woof, whatever service skin is used for. If so, it is malignant, and it is Zaraat, and the thing is unclean. This word, by the way, that's used here in the Hebrew, malignant, is fretting or pricking. It's the first time that word shows up. And in this case, with a garment, it gets burned. Whether it's wool or linen, it's malignant. It is to be burned in the fire. Now, if the priest looks and behold, this plague hasn't spread in the garment or anything made of skin, well, then he can command that it be washed and going to shut it up for 7 days more, and then the Kohen will look, see if it's after it's washed, and has it changed color. If the plague has not spread, it is unclean. Still, burn it with fire. Let me make sure I read that right. Okay, so here's the key. If it has been washed, but it didn't change color in spite of the washing, even if the plague has not spread, it's unclean. Burn it with fire anyway. Now, if the priest checks it out and this thing has dimmed after it's been washed, then he shall rend it out of the garment or out of the skin, out of the warp or out of the woof. And if it still appears in the garment and the warp or the woof or anything of skin and breaks out, well, you got to burn it with fire. And the garment or the warp or the woof or whatsoever thing of skin it be, you shall wash. And if the plague has departed, well, wash it a second time. And now it will be, in fact, tahor. The portion ends this way. It says law in the English. You know, I'm not wild about that translation. It says, this is the Torah of the plague of Zaraat, whether it's in a garment of wool or linen, in the warp or the woof or anything of skin. And it is, of course, the Kohen who will pronounce it clean or to pronounce it unclean, tahor or tameh. What's the point of all of this, right? We don't have this stuff anymore. The point, at least originally, and I think it still is, discernment. We live in a society now that says, oh, to have discernment at all is a negative thing. To call something what it is, to separate ourselves from it, to call something unclean, somehow or other that is discrimination. How dare you do this? Just because the God of the Bible says you're supposed to. And ironically, yeah, I think if we had a little bit more Zaraat, we'd have a whole lot less of that idiocy. But that's an opinion. Can't prove it, but we certainly are where we are. And if you look at the world, it's, I would contend, kind of difficult to argue again. So with that, we'll pause and I'm going to ask a question. I'll come back to this question later. But I couldn't help but as I was putting together some notes for what I want to talk about tomorrow. Some of you know, I got to introduce it. I can't just ask the question, okay? Some of you know that there is a legal concept of people, we the people. The Bible talks about a living soul, nefesh, the breath of life, the ruach, okay? These are things that characterize a living being. Adam, a man, and so forth. On the other hand, just as I usually emphasize every week, there are corporate fictions, corporate creations that aren't created by the Creator. Sometimes they call themselves licensed 501c3 churches or the like. But what is a corporation, right? If you go get a law dictionary, you'll find a corporation is a person. What? I thought we were persons. Nope. We have souls. We're people. That is different in a legal sense from a mere person, which can be a corporate fiction, doesn't have a soul. So here's the question, right? You know where I'm going to head. Can a corporation get Zaraat? Can it be? Well, it can certainly be malignant. We've seen a lot of malignant corporations running around lately. But with that, I'll say, well, we'll pick it up there. We'll talk about that in some more detail later on. So with that, let's pause. We'll have a little bit more music. Then we'll talk about an entire world that should be afflicted with Zaraat, but instead it's got something that's a lot worse. Okay, I won't do the whole introduction. You've already heard me talk about that, the idea that we're supposed to know the times and the seasons. Sorry about that. So here's where I was, where I intended to start, and actually did start, but y'all didn't get to hear it. Colorado has now become the 15th state to pass an abomination, and I use that term, that doesn't quite get it, although it's the strongest word in the Hebrew, an abomination they call the red flag, or emergency risk protection order, ERPO, which is, again, what I want to do when I hear about this abomination. A single vote in the Senate, we got an absolute scumbag in the governor's office who's already said he'll sign it. As far as I know, I didn't see anything, hadn't signed it yet, but that doesn't mean that he isn't lusting to do it real soon now. By the way, in case you think we have a man in the White House who understands better, no. Trump, too, betrayed his oath on this. The intent is to pass this abomination nationwide. You've got scumbags like Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio that are rhinos that are saying, oh, we'll push it, too, and we'll incent the states to do more of this kind of stuff. Trump's famous line was, take the guns first, worry about due process second. Think about that. The hell with due process. What I started to say that you didn't hear was the fact that of all of the bogus things that masquerade as law, if you ever understood what AMJUR, I think it's Section 166 says, a law that is in violation of the Constitution is no law at all. It confers no rights or obligations. It's null from the day that it's passed, not from the day that some court figures out what should have been obvious. It is not a law. And that is what this ERPO so-called red flag thing is. It's not a law. But what it does do, interestingly, is it violates more specific enumerated elements in the Constitution. Not just the Second Amendment, not just the Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, not just the 14th Amendment, things having to do with due process. The very concept of property rights, facing your accuser, legitimate courts, you name it. This violates all of them. And this is basically saying we're going to get some people that think because they have a badge and a gun, but they violate their oath, they're going to break down somebody's door and steal their guns. Well, the intent here is to cause a civil war and to get a whole bunch of people killed. Either honest citizens who know that when somebody comes to take your guns, they are an enemy to the Constitution and they are a traitor and they're making war. Or the cops themselves that carry out an unlawful order. And I started to say this, too. Would that we still had Zaraat. Because if so, there'd be a whole lot of legislators, walking around with hair growing out of sunken spots, spreading over their disgusting bodies real rapidly for violating their oaths and committing Lashon Hara and just about every other sin that was on that list. This is disgusting stuff, and it really is about as far over the top as you can get. Now, the other thing I mentioned while we were silent there was the fact that the good news is, out of 62 sheriffs and counties in the state of Colorado, 50 of them have said, we will not enforce this abomination. Now, whether all of them will follow through on that remains to be seen. Some of them may cave. But I hope that people that have an honest intent to honor their oath before God will do that. And so that's the good news. There's a whole lot of sheriffs that are willing to do the right thing. Matter of fact, one of them, I like this quote, Weld County Sheriff, and that was not too far from where we used to be in northern Colorado. Got a lot of friends still in Weld County. Sheriff Steve Reams there said, quote, it's a matter of doing what's right. He won't enforce it. If necessary, he said, he'll even go to jail rather than violate his oath. So all of this is good stuff to the extent that there are people fighting it. Now, what's bad is there's no hiding it. This is clearly an intent to not just gang rape the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, but literally to try to foment a civil war. And as I've mentioned, don't expect the central government, the Senate, and even the president to honor their oaths on this score. All right, that brings me to another nasty, evil, leftist bastion of Boston, where there's a DA named Rachel Rollins. And this scumbag produced something called the Rollins Memo. And what it is a no-prosecute list. You ready for this? This is a scumbag who also presumably took an oath to faithfully execute the law and the Constitution. What's that? Scumbagette, yes, it's a female. And she lists an entire list of green-lighted offenses, all against property. Things that they're going to say, oh, we're no longer going to bother to arrest or prosecute. Trespassing, shoplifting, disorderly conduct, or any wanton or malicious destruction of property. Steal? Go ahead. Now, by the way, we've already pre-disarmed the people of Boston for a large part, so hey, what's anybody going to do? You've got essentially, we're going to kill the rule of law, take away people's right to defend themselves, and then tell the criminals, yeah, go for it. We've opened the door. They've done everything except say, you're not allowed to lock your doors against the theft that we got planned. Oh, and get this. Listen to this lying sack of, Zaraat. Quote, this, she said, is a roadmap to a criminal justice system that works equally for everyone. Well, some are more equal than others, obviously. What she meant is everyone who matters. And then she even used the word stakeholders in here. Now, you know, a stakeholder basically is socialist, communist slang for somebody that is equal to but not a property owner. Somebody else has a stakeholder in your property. You own it. Well, you thought you did. They're a stakeholder. That way they can come and take it away, steal it, and not be prosecuted. This is where we are. A former police officer told the Boston Herald, here's a no-brainer. If everybody knows they're going to get a free pass, he says decorum will go out the window. These are basic quality of life issues. No, it's worse than that, folks. It's literally a blank check to say, go and steal. We're going to look the other way. Criminals are going to respond to incentives, said a high-ranking criminal justice expert. They'll do more of something if they know they're not going to get in trouble for it. Gee, do you think? All right, we have an invasion going on, of course, to the south. This has gone out of control this week as well. Makes sense if you think about it. What you got is, on the one hand, so-called district attorneys saying, we could care less about property crimes. California, right, bring the illegal aliens in. They're above the law. They shoot somebody in the back, like we saw in San Francisco, where a young woman was shot in the back by an illegal. Oh, he gets off without so much as a Jussie Smollett mini slap on the wrist. Meanwhile, we'll provide sanctuary cities for them, but however you talk about a crime, you thought you owned a piece of property that you could use to defend yourself against these law-breaking scumbags? Uh-uh! We'll kill you to take away your property. How dare you think that Constitution has any standing whatsoever in the new socialist states? So we've got the border crisis and a lot of information that came out this week. Basically, we're talking over a million. I've seen other estimates saying, nope, given what happened today, probably 2 million or more illegals coming across the border. Even in February, the rate was pushing upwards now of 100,000 per month. These are people that are caught, that are overwhelming the system. They get in, they say, hey, we made it, got our Ali Ali Atsin free card, you can't kick us out. Ha, 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 na, 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 na. In Texas, little town called McAllen, Texas, is at one of the forefronts. This small town reports that asylum seekers are now being released, not just coming across, released into the city at a rate of over 800 per day. Do the math. That's a city every year coming in. Really, said the city manager, we've never seen anything like this before. This is a system-wide collapse, said any number of Border Patrol officials, and basically the Secretary of DHS, Kirsten Nelson, said something similar. The border crisis is real. It's out of control. We're losing. What happened overnight, in case you hadn't heard? Trump, who said, this is so bad we might have to shut down the border. What did he do? He caved. Oh, well, okay. We'll give him a year. And after a year, if Mexico doesn't do something about it, we're going to be really, really upset with you. I promise, this time for sure. Give me a break. A year? That's another several million. Now, what's interesting is after that particular cave, a lot of people said, hey, wait a minute, you know what just happened? The rate has suddenly doubled of illegals. Guess what? If you're going to throw the doors open, yeah, come on up. I saw a story today about people showing up in Tapachula getting off planes. Remember, Sri Lanka, the Congo, and other places, literally, Haiti was one of them, flying in on airplanes. Now, where are they getting the money to fly in to Tapachula? Unless maybe it's a Move On or some Soros or other internationally funded invasion operation. They're flying folks in. Tapachula's at the far end of Mexico. Why not just fly them right to McAllen? Oh, well, no, you know, fly them in, put them in a caravan, let them come forth and join the invasion like everybody else. Folks, this is out of control on so many fronts. We've already seen Europe basically destroyed. What is the genuine goal here? All right, well, there are people that know that once upon a time, this nation was founded on the idea that were certain self-evident truths. truths, among these, right, God-given rights, life, liberty, and property. Well, we don't have any of those things anymore. Colorado just finished joining the club and saying, the hell with property, we're taking that away. And your right to defend it? No. The founders literally pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honors for a hell of a lot less of an incentive. On another front, a little bit of good news, I guess, at this point. Brussels, Belgium. Okay, most of you know that I have been no fan of 5G, millimeter wavelength death from radiation. Okay, this is going to be foisted on not just America, not just Europe, not just Canada, but all kinds of places around the world. They're going to even launch a constellation of satellites if they can't kill you by putting stuff outside your house and beaming this in so you don't get sleep or your DNA strands get broken. The problem with these new 5G frequencies is they're very, very much higher in frequency, very much shorter in wavelength thus. And that means that the wavelengths are literally very, very tiny, on the order of the size of the pores in your skin, which act like little receiving antennas. So your entire skin surface becomes an absorber for this nasty radiation. And the military has already announced. Now, this is the funny thing. They're going to say, well, we don't know the biological effects. The hell they don't. They know exactly what some of them are because they have used them to develop weaponry. So this is a weaponized system being sold as, you can download a movie faster. Watch it as you die. Watch it as your brain rots, as your DNA chains are broken, as you develop cancers and melanomas and all kinds of wonderful stuff. Big Brother loves you. Well, in Brussels, the Céline Frémaux, the environmental minister, has said, we're not going to allow 5G to come in. We must protect the citizen, 5G or not. Quote, the people of Brussels are not guinea pigs whose health I can sell at a profit. Well, that puts her up there with some Colorado sheriffs, I guess. And others have pointed out, of course, that, if you're an honest scientist, the development of 5G needs to be halted. Well, not in America. Not in most places in the world. But there are a few that are waking up and figuring out. I guess along the same lines, I'll point this out. I wasn't going to mention this, but I saw a story today. I don't know whether most places of the country have Costcos. We got several in the vicinity here. As a matter of fact, one of the only things I miss about being in a larger city is the availability of a nearby Costco. Okay. Because they have all kinds of good stuff, quality products at good prices, yada, yada. Sounds like an advertisement. Okay, a lot of organic foods, too. Well, Costco announced today that after the second, in just about as many months, major court verdict saying that Monsanto, that's the correct pronunciation of the term, remember glyphosate Roundup, another well-known carcinogen that they lied to people, covered up health information about for years. They got caught. We're talking tens of millions of dollars in awards so far. Costco said, we've had it. And they've announced, we're not going to carry any more Roundup, glyphosate, herbicides, or products, period. Store shelves emptied. So hear, hear to Costco, and may the other major purveyors of poisons follow suit, because this stuff is deadly. All right, in Canada, and some of you know this is a nasty thing. I know we got several people, Canadians, online, and I'm sorry to have to report this, but hey, it's going on all over. In Canada, of course, there never was a Bill of Rights. They have a charter, which is pretty wimpy when it comes to thou shalt not. Not that the wording seems to have slowed down the traitors in Congress. But in British Columbia, a so-called BC Human Rights Tribunal has fined a man that's called a Christian activist named Bill Whatcott $55,000 for the crime of misgendering. His crime is that there was a high-profile man who called himself a transgender woman. And this guy wasn't even a candidate. He was the head of the BC far-left New Democratic Party. Radical policies, sexuality, you name it. They sound like, the occasional Cortex. And this guy added gender identity to the British Columbia non-discrimination law. Okay, so what this fellow did was passed out some flyers where he dared to quote the Bible and similar verboten things. He went to court. The court and the so-called court, he rightfully called it a, let's see here. I've got his law. Oh, kangaroo court. During the hearing, Whatcott refused to buckle. He continued to refer to the person, Ogre, that's the name, as a male, despite being admonished several times by the judges. He also wore a shirt with a message describing Ogre as a man and a quote from the Bible. Male and female, he created them. Genesis 5, verse 2. And he referred to the tribunal, what it is, as a kangaroo court. And for that, the tribunal levied additional fines on him. And ironically, one of the judges even slipped up and referred to the man as a man during the trial, but they didn't fine him. Okay, they issued a 104-page ruling that essentially said, we're not even going to try to hide it. This decision limits Whatcott's religious freedom and his freedom of expression. And you know what? We could care less. Here's from the 104-page BS, here's a quote. There's no dispute that a decision against Mr. Whatcott would limit his charter right to freedom of religion, while Mr. Whatcott would remain free to hold his beliefs in private, he would be limited in the manner in which he could spread those views to the general public. No doubt that a decision against Mr. Whatcott would limit his freedom to publicly express his views about transgender people generally as well. His sin, he declared the truth. And there is only one truth. It has nothing to do with the Bible. It's whatever this kangaroo court says it is. And here's the upshot. This is a piece that I'm looking at online. It says that one cannot exaggerate how nonsensical and outright irrational this so-called human rights tribunal ruling against Whatcott is. A bunch of phony legalese. And basically, it's a radical, illogical, lunatic ideology that's taken hold with the elites now controlling the Canadian system of, quote, justice. The statement boils down to the overriding premise that gender identity comprises a protected class, trannies' feelings are sacred and cannot be hurt, and their rights trump everything else. Your right to freedom of expression, religion, you name it, including the basic facts of human biology. This is yet another abomination. And I won't even go through the tribunal's orders, but he has to pay this scumbag $35,000 because he hurt his dignity, feelings, and self-respect. And he has to pay another $20,000 to the ogre because of his improper conduct by misgendering it. And he has to pay interest until these things are all paid off. Okay. In this country, I mentioned last week the raid by the Gestapo police against the Child Protective Services in Arizona. Paul Craig Roberts wrote a great piece earlier about saying, hey, you know, what they've created is a Gestapo police state. Think about it, folks. They're going to disarm you. They'll take away your guns, and yeah, they'll take away your kids, too. For the crime of misgendering, it would seem, that's coming real soon. The crime in this case was not vaccinating. And although you can understand one other thing, there is significant talk about, yes, if we feel like it, we'll strap you down on a gurney and we'll inject you with anything we blankety-blank and well want to. In Virginia, they got a new way to turn gun owners into criminals, and this is called brandishing. They actually convicted a fellow on two of several counts of brandishing and assault because a guy heard a commotion in his own front yard, and he carried a BB gun out onto the front yard of his own property and asked people what they were doing. The BB gun, nobody even argued, was pointed in a safe direction. He never leveled the dreaded BB gun at anybody. And he thought nothing happened. The people walked away. They didn't answer his questions, but they didn't continue breaking and entering. And later the cops came and took him away. And so essentially what this attorney for the guy is saying is the body cam video, interviews after the fact, all basically made the same point. But the crime was he merely carried something that somebody thought looked like a firearm. Achtung ist verboten. All right, now I'll mention one other thing because it's not going to happen. Well, here, let's do this one. Two Houston residents were killed, four cops wounded in a shootout there. After yet another no-knock raid, Wrong place, didn't find anything, but they ended up killing a couple people. There you go. Oh, well. Here's a piece that I think is kind of interesting, and it really does begin to put all these elements of, you know, the gang rape of the Constitution into the proper perspective. Mike Adams wrote this one. I give him credit. I wish I'd thought of it first. Once he mentioned it, I thought, yeah, that's brilliant and obvious now. In hindsight, the brilliant stuff always is. Trump, rather than caving, ought to actually exercise a legitimate constitutional power. All right. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says Congress shall have the power to do a number of things. And one of them is this: to provide for calling forth the militia, to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and, are you sitting down, repel invasions. Now, Congress later said, well, you know, in the case of a real invasion, the president has the authority to do that. By the way, lest you be concerned, the National Guard may be an element of the organized militia, but it is not the militia. The militia is the whole people. And by statute, even later, those that can be called into unorganized militia or organized militia service, all males up to the age of 45, essentially, you know, age of majority up through 45, I think it was 17 in the latter statutes. But, of course, historically, and by the provisions of the argument surrounding the Second Amendment, literally it's the entire people, no doubt about it, that comprise the unorganized militia. So what would Trump do? Activate the militia. Tell folks, you know what? You have a constitutionally protected right, if he'd ever read the Constitution, to keep and bear arms. You have a right to defend your property. You have an obligation, as a matter of fact, to do these things constitutionally and statutorily. So those that would like to head on down to the border and defend your country against a several million person invasion, will there be bloodshed? Perhaps so. If he doesn't, will there be bloodshed? Absolutely guaranteed. Now, what would be really cool about this is I can see a whole bunch of leftist heads exploding. How dare he actually read that Constitution thing? And, well, to quote the Wicked Witch of the West slightly differently, who does not a good little girl like you can ruin all of my beautiful wickedness? It would, in fact, do more for the Constitution than this guy has done in his entire presidential term of office, simply by saying, you know what? Americans do have a right to keep and bear arms, and your country needs to be defended against this invasion. Use your God-given rights to defend your property, your neighbors, your lives, your children, your posterity, and, yeah, the rule of law. He ought to do it. And will he? I think your guess is probably as good as mine, and we both know what that guess would be. In any case, here we are in a place where, I can't help but say it again. It would be beautiful. It would be wonderful if the creator of the universe hadn't decided that, you know what, now that these folks are all in exile, they no longer deserve the feedback mechanism of Zara'at, because we could sure use it.